You're listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. You can find out more about the resource and construction industry, including how to communicate consciously with your stakeholders at resourceindustrymedia.com.au.
Welcome to the Connected Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. I'm Kieran Moran, Managing Director of Resource Industry Media. The Connected Industry Podcast series is designed to tell the stories of the people who work in the resource and construction sector throughout Australia. It's our goal for these podcasts to not only keep you up to date with the latest resource and construction news, information and procurement opportunities, but most importantly, build relationships between you and our guests so you can connect with their stories and get a better understanding of how to communicate and tell your business story right. On this week's Connected Industry Podcast, we have Cameron Smith, Fortescue Future Industries Head of Manufacturing and for the Global Green Energy Manufacturing Centre to be built in Gladstone. A former military officer who holds a Bachelor of Civil Engineering, Cameron has over 20 years' experience working in senior leadership roles in both government and private organisations, predominantly in the military, security, construction and mining sectors. Cameron has been with Fortescue Future Industries since its inception. More recently, he was given the manufacturing portfolio where he's responsible to ensure all the major input systems and components for Fortescue Future Industry projects are available at a viable cost, quality and quantum with a broad focus across the value chain and currently involves projects in wind and solar generation, hydrogen production and major electrification systems. Welcome, Cameron, to the podcast.
Thanks very much for having me, Kieran.
Okay, as people heard within that intro, you've got some vast experience across the way, from what we can tell. But you did you start within the military before you moved into like the construction and mining sectors and the resource sector?
Yeah, that's right. I was lucky enough when I left school to go through the academy in Duntroon, had an excellent time in the military, working for my entire time under SOCOM. And then went across the Middle East and had an opportunity there to work with the Emirates Armed Forces, again, mostly across the Special Operations Community, and then moved into roles that include a lot of training, a lot of work within the sort of counterterrorism structure that sits within at the national level, and then a lot of work within the sort of construction and infrastructure group.
And that's part of the area that I have got a little bit of interest in, creating viable projects that encourage local development and employment. Can you give us a little bit of a word of what you were doing there?
Yeah, sure. Look, I was very, very lucky in the roles that I had over there. I sort of fairly consistently went into new roles. Each time there was sort of a requirement identified, I was asked to support it, and we were able to develop different groups to sort of support the development of the different capabilities. A huge role, I guess, that I finished up on was looking after the training facilities project. So that was 70-odd assets or facilities in total across about 22 sites, all constructed using local construction contractors. A little bit of design work actually came out of Australia. That's where the expertise in those particular facilities is quite a niche series of facilities. And then it was all with local contractors and, you know, obviously the benefit of those construction contracts going to the local community.
And what sort of projects were they? What were you building?
It was a series of training facilities. So a lot of bespoke facilities that allow soldiers within their presidential guard to gain an understanding and experience in live fire training activities in sort of built up environments. So what are loosely termed internal kill houses or shoot houses is the terminology we use, where soldiers are able to shoot in a 360 degree environment, nighttime environments, gaseous environments, as well as a whole bunch of other training facilities that assist in other support functions like roping towers, pools and systems that allow teams to dive and use water approaches, and a range of other sort of shooting ranges, both outdoor and indoor.
Okay, then, and how's that experience yourself? We'd like to also talk about, you know, yourself and, you know, not just your experience, but how you've developed into the person that you are and to the high level of project development that you do. How did that experience, I'm not sure how many years ago, we won't give away your age or anything like that, but how's that developed yourself to be able to, you know, not only just work with on projects, but work with people across the sector from working in these types of countries?
Yeah, look, I've been very, very lucky. My entire professional experience has been quite global. I've deployed on operations in military through the Pacific, operations in East Timor, been to Afghanistan, been to Iraq, and sort of the countries that are supporting those efforts. So I was already quite familiar with working in with different nationalities and different cultures. The work in particular in the UAE was quite a complex program. Having so many different sites, it was across all phases of development. So from the scoping, design, construction, commissioning, and then operating the facilities, and doing it across so many different locations. While they were not across a country as large as Australia, they were in very, very different locations all the way across the Emirates. And each of the facilities and locations had different themes and functions that we had to produce. So, look, it gave me a very good understanding of the need for structure, a difference between the understanding of the whole portfolio and where we could get synergies and where we could get standardisation to make sure we keep those costs down and also make sure we learn lessons on every site that we can feed into the sites, the future sites. So, look, it was a fantastic project to be involved in. I'm a civil engineer by academic training, although I've never really sort of spent too much time doing project management or civil engineering. But my entire time in the military, you know, in effect was about different programs and projects that we were running to make sure we could develop and maintain and execute on capabilities that were required by the government. So, look, it was really, I guess, a bit of a culmination. That series of projects were demanding. There were certainly issues along the way, and that sort of forced me into an environment where I had to really rely heavily on building a really strong team around us and make sure that as these issues came up, we were able to deal with them and you know, produce outcomes for the organisation.
During this program, we do like to ask a lot of people in relation to how they work and how they do work and remain motivated. Now, I suspect working with the military that you're a very disciplined man. And one thing I have asked a number of CEOs of companies and project managers, for that matter, is how do you sleep at night with everything so much on your plate? And a lot of them say that they don't. And, you know, some people, they meditate, some people go to the gym. But yourself, how do you remain disciplined within your position, you know, then and even now?
Yeah, look, it's a good question. And I'd love to say there's a very simple solution that makes it all fall into place. But I think the reality is, you know, I've got quite a young family. I've got four fairly young children, you know, so that is a really big focus of mine. I've got a lot better, I think, over the years of being able to come home and leave work at work. I think for me personally, what I've realised is that, you know, the time spent at home stressing or being worried certainly doesn't help. I very much like to employ the sort of concept that, you know, you need to concentrate and focus on the things that you can influence. And not be too bothered by and don't get hung up on the things that you can't. We are in an incredibly exciting environment. And to be honest, I love the role I have. I love the job we're doing. And I love the vision of the company. No one ever said that sort of stuff is going to be easy, but it's certainly an easy role to come to work to. And on any given day, I have an excellent team around me. My job really is to make sure they have the resources and the support they need to achieve the outcomes. And if that's the case, then, you know, we're achieving that as a group. So I don't find it particularly hard to, you know, focus my energy at any given time on the sort of the problem at hand. I guess the real key, I think, with what Fortescue Future Industries is doing is we're tackling so many different parts of an industry. We're building an industry. We're building a market as well as we're building a supply at the same time. That comes with natural frictions. And, you know, my role here really is to empower the people that work around me. So that we can make sure we can, you know, execute on the vision that we've got from our board and our chairman.
Today, at the moment, we are speaking to Cameron Smith from Fortescue Future Industries, and he's the head of manufacturing for FFI. And of course, we're speaking to Cameron in relation to the global manufacturing project that's based in Gladstone. And that is a project that will be presented at the Connecting Renewable Energy Conference on April 7th in the lead up to that conference. And that's one of the reasons why we are having a chat to Cameron today. So, okay, Cameron, in relation to Fortescue, before we get on to the actual project, in relation to Fortescue, you've been with them, Fortescue Future Industries, since its inception, but you was also with them a little bit beforehand, and from what I can see, in a consulting role and so forth. First off, how did you get into then when you come back to Australia and got onto some of the projects that you've been working on? How did you get into those projects, and how did it move up into Fortescue?
Yeah, so I when I left the Middle East, I had been toying for some time with the idea of what the opportunities might be to move the family back to Australia and sort of have my kids grow up in Australia. My wife and I decided at one point that it was about time. And I was lucky enough through my internal network that I was offered a role to take over as the CEO of a small Singapore-based mining company that had met coal assets in Indonesia. I came back to Australia. I worked out of Perth and spent a lot of time on the road traveling both to Singapore and Indonesia. And through that process, I was actually introduced to some opportunities through my network back in the UAE. Through that connection, I was introduced to Julie Shuttleworth, who at the time was the deputy CEO and responsible for exploration new projects in Fortescue Metals Group. And then she became, as you would know, the CEO of Fortescue Future Industries. Through the process or in early 2020, the board had directed Julie to focus really completely on renewable green hydrogen. She had a small trip up to Indonesia at the start of 2020. She called me just before that trip and asked if I'd be available and willing to support that visit. And on completion of that visit up to Indonesia, she indicated she wanted me to support a more broader visit for mid-2020 right around the world with herself and the chairman. You probably recall early end of the first quarter of 2020 was when COVID restrictions really hit in a level of detail. At that stage, she said, look, we're going to have to wait. We're not going to go on this trip yet. I was then called in early June and asked if I could go across to Indonesia to support Fortescue Future Industries as the country manager. And within a few short weeks after that, she said, you need to come home and then support a global trip. So I was on the global trip with FFI, the chairman, the CEO, and that team all through the back half of 2020. And then in very early 2021, at our think tank, the chairman indicated that he thought I should take over and support the development of the manufacturing portfolio. So just over a year ago now, and we've been trying to grow a capability to make sure that all of the major systems right across generation, hydrogen production and electrification can be supplied in a quantum at a cost and at a quality that's going to support the development of all our internal projects.
Yeah, and that's one of the interesting things in relation to, so of course, in Gladstone, and that's what you'll be presenting at the Connected and Renewable Energy Conference, the Global Green Energy Manufacturing Centre, or GEM for short, for Fortescue Future Industries. And it's stage one of the development at the moment, but there are six stages. Could you just go through what are the eventual plans for Fortescue as that entire project sort of moves forward?
Yeah, so look, if you look at the renewable energy resources in Queensland, they're very good combinations of wind and solar. So while the production of hydrogen itself is based on electrolysis, and that's what our first joint venture with Plug Power is, the electrolyzer facility, which is phase one of the GEM in Gladstone. The remaining phases relate to the combination of wind, which is blades, towers and nacelles are all separate facilities. Solar, which has both modules and arrays. And then there's also the electrification that needs to go with being able to manage such large volumes of electricity generation. So everything from transformers to inverters and rectifiers to transmission lines and the switchgear and even the power electronics are all required in massive volumes, not only in Queensland, but right across Australia as we move to sort of a green energy matrix. So The exact timing of which phase will be next is almost a level of competition. We're moving very, very fast right now. We've got identified partners for the key technologies, and we're looking right now, and in fact, in a master planning phase at the moment, to plan out the remainder of those facilities in Gladstone.
And that's actually extremely exciting because, you know, it is one thing that we've heard, you know, I myself for at least 3 years now in relation to, you know, the turbines and the blades and, you know, panels even to that point, that most of everything is really produced overseas. And also one of the issues is not to Australian standards as well. So as we know, Fortescue, of course, with Twiggy Forrest and so forth, and he's been going up and down the coast and around the country promoting these type of projects and putting them forward, which, you know, from what I know, a lot of people are saying extremely well done, because it's something that we definitely need in this country.
I think there's a broad understanding that Australia, more generally, we are a high cost of labour market. And what that's meant over the years is that manufacturing capability has been offshored into the lower cost labor markets. I think something we've learned in the last couple of years and has really been reinforced with the pandemic is that giving away your sovereign ability to have basic levels of manufacturing, component and equipment manufacturing is a real danger. And the opportunity for Australia in the renewable energy space is quite literally unequaled. We have a more total combined resource in wind and solar with land that is either not contested, so it's not used today for farming or for population growth. We have small amounts of vegetation and fairly limited undulation. That means that we have an absolutely unbelievable opportunity to create massive amounts of renewable energy here in Australia. And by turning it into green hydrogen, we can then ship it off to the rest of the world, where you have countries like Japan, like South Korea, who don't have the same ability to generate renewable energy within their own geographies. So what all that means is we're either going to continually outsource our entire supply chain to the low-cost labor markets, or we're going to embrace advanced manufacturing processes that allow us to have the Australian labor in the technical roles and also allow us to compete on a cost basis with the low-cost labor markets, where we should definitely beat them when it comes to quality and we can produce in a quantum that's required. And it really comes down to our ability to make sure we have an entire ecosystem around that supply chain, which means whatever we can possibly produce here in Australia, it's very easy to bring in raw materials through shipping containers. It's much harder to bring in massive components and systems like towers, like wind blades from other markets where you've got to then bring them onshore as a ready-made piece of equipment. So we see the opportunity here to onshore a lot of advanced manufacturing, which will then directly support the move into a green energy matrix and particularly the production of green hydrogen.
Okay, well, as listeners know, and for those that don't, of course, Cameron Smith, he's from Fortescue Future Industries. He'll be presenting at the Connecting Renewable Energy Conference Queensland on April 7th, which is only in a couple of days. If you do want to get onto that conference, connectingindustry.com.au. Now, Cameron, of course, most of the a lot of the supply chain do attend. Believe it or not, we've got a lot of government as well attending this conference on Thursday, April 7th. With the supply chain attending and so forth, and with what you are doing specifically in Gladstone, what can they expect and how can you see where their involvement could be within this project?
Look, it's an excellent question, Kieran, and I think the really strong message we need to make sure everybody understands is that this is not an incremental change. This is not a little bit more of things that we've done in the past. This needs an entire approach from government and from industry to work together to create these ecosystems and supply chains that can deliver on the absolutely massive quantums of renewable energy systems that we need to put in place in Australia that will allow us to become a net exporter of energy. It will not work without that support. We absolutely must have government on board. And I'll make a note that the Queensland government have been outstanding from the start of our discussions on making sure that we have a good understanding of how they can support us. But it's not just Queensland and not just the Queensland government. You know, the federal government need to be involved in this. The local council in Gladstone have been outstanding. And this needs to be replicated across the country. So I guess the key message here is we have to develop these local ecosystems. Other countries have had tens of years, at least in some cases over 100 years, of developing ecosystems and supply chains for some of these key systems. We need to do that in a very, very short time within Australia. And the absolute best way we can do that is by all of us banding together and making sure we clearly outline what the requirements are and how we can best serve them here in Australia.
And just finally, I do have to ask a question as well. With hydrogen, a lot of different ways that people are trying to do it, different projects and looking at it. And, of course, you're involved directly with it. Where do you see its future?
Yeah, look, hydrogen, the benefit of hydrogen is it's ubiquitous in terms of, you know, it is absolutely available anywhere. You use water to create it, and then when it is used within a fuel cell, it turns back into water. So it is the only truly green way to export renewable energy. Now, obviously, we need to find the right balance here because there are certain systems where a battery may be more appropriate. But there's two things about batteries. First of all, that a battery only stores the energy that's been made somewhere else. And batteries also require mineralogy today that is in some ways and can be in many ways constrained. So if you look, for example, purely at the supply chain of cobalt, there is significant concerns over that supply chain. So, look, green hydrogen is an incredible available energy resource. As long as it's produced with renewable energy, it is absolutely the answer to energy independence. What we need to do is develop the systems around green hydrogen to make sure that it is easily deployable and it can be used both across social, domestic, and industrial applications.
Okay, well, I'm definitely looking forward to your presentation at the conference on April 7th. But thank you very much for joining us today on the Connecting Industry podcast, Cameron. It's been great having you.
Really appreciate it, Kieran. Thanks very much for your time.
You've been listening to the Connecting Industry podcast interview series with Kieran Moran from Resource Industry Media. To find out more about the resource and construction industry, including past podcasts, news and events, go to resourceindustrymedia.com.au.